2003, I believe, or 2002, and really touched me. I wish that every one of you could go and visit there just one time, because of the fact of the dedication that the people there have for the Lord. And I've always said, and you may have heard me say this before, these things that we have over here that we call blessings, they're not, they're hindrances. Because over there they don't have all these things, such as ball games to go to and sports and, you know, just there's just so many things we have here they don't have. And when you have a church service, they know you're coming. They come for miles around. They'll walk miles to come and sit and listen to you talk as long as you're willing to stand there and talk. My brother Harry, I've been in meetings where Harry stand there and talk for 8 hours, and he'd sit there the whole time just eating it up. And that makes you feel good. We're getting ready to leave on the 2nd. In fact, we're leaving next Monday. Ron Scott and Ron Slocum and I are going over. We're going to spend the whole month of July. And we've got requests scattered all over the whole meeting. I think that's the number one thing, is to, the teaching. And then there's other things over there that we want to check into, too, the gardening, the droughts situation, and all these things that, you know, happen to these people. But it's a joy. I thank the good Lord for blessing me in the fact that I am able to go. And it's only very little that we do. But I do thank that the good Lord that I'm able to go over there and see it for myself and just be a little part of trying to help these people. There was something that was said. I can't remember who it was. It might have been Brother McNair. Or he was talking about his wife. He was talking about the women going over. I know Eric can tell you this. Didn't some ladies go with you at one time? There's a place over there in Blantyre that we looked into, and it's a kind of a hotel, motel, whatever, and I believe it's fairly reasonable in price. It's got a wall around it. They have guards there, and they have real good food in that facility there, different restaurants and what have you. So it's a place there that if anyone wants to go there and stay, and then as we have a meeting out somewhere, we can figure out a way to come and pick them up and carry them out to the meeting and let them be a part of it. I know the women over there would really enjoy it. When we go, Harry can tell you about this, but now when we go to these meetings, they hear you coming. The women will come out, and it might be a half a mile or a mile before you get to the church, and they'll sing the whole way, clapping and singing, and you'll never meet any happier people in your life. They're just really excited to see you. And so that's something to touch you too. But this trip, we're going to plan on going into Mozambique. We got requests to go into Mozambique on the East Bank and also on the West Bank. When we get over there, we get a visa there in Blantyre to go and visit these people. And some of these people we went to one time. I know you remember Brother Harris, where the guy told us it was near. We kept driving near and near. And finally, we had to... I'll tell you that little story. We met a guy at the border, and he had rode a bicycle for like 2 days to get there to the border to meet us. And we got there, we went in, and he kept telling us how far it was. He said, near. We'd drive 20 miles, and it's near. 20 more miles near. Behind us, we had to put him out and leave him and turn around and go back, because we had to get back across the border before it closed. And we did set up a time, and we met him back there at the place where we put him out a week later, and he took us on. We were pretty close. I think we was almost 4 or 5 miles from the church building. But these people, they had never seen sliced bread. They were just, you know, peanut butter. They hadn't seen that hardly. And they really appreciated us coming, and we stayed in the tent. I think we'll probably do that again this time. But anyway, they look forward to us coming, and we look forward to going. Is there any questions about it? I don't know what else to tell you. But if there's any ever time that some of the women would like to go and couples together or whatever, we can, it's possible, I'll put it that way, if there's those that would really like to go and be a part of that and see it.
That same place that Brother Bennett was telling you about in Mozambique, where the man had, we had to let the men off and turn around because we had to get back to the border, or else we'd have been caught improperly in Mozambique. He didn't tell you this part. I need to go a little further about it. We were in a tent. He and I were there in a tent, and everybody in places like this want to see what you're doing because you're so unusual and the tent's so unusual. We tried sleeping in that tent, and I mean, it's a pitiful thing to sleep on. I tell you, this small little tent and the air mattresses and so on was not very comfortable, but to think in terms of living conditions like that, let me go to the other extreme. We had some garbage. I mean, just some plastic like you'd throw in a garbage can today. We had several more things in a bag that we were going to, we had a fire going there. We were going to pitch it over in the fire and burn it up, because nobody wanted that, surely. But they took that before it caught on fire and beat it out, and every one of them grabbed what they could out of it. Just a piece of plastic, that's all they wanted. They don't have anything. Just absolutely desperate. And the same place where a man got caught by a crocodile. And we remember the church there. We were not there at that particular time, but he did. And then also, Brother Danny likes to take candy over and get a bunch of the people that and take this candy and throws it up in the air, and of course they scramble for it just like the chickens after a piece of corn. They don't get candy. It's unusual. But it's a real lot of fun to watch them do those kind of things. That's one place in Mozambique. Another place in Mozambique, we were going across one day, had to get across the border in our truck, because we had a truckload of Bibles and such type to take us across. There's another way to go, illegal, but another place to cross the river without the truck. A lot closer, but we had a truckload, we had to take it. So we had some people come 7 solid hours they walked to get to the border to meet us there. And they did. One of them was barefooted. Walked 7 hours barefooted to get to meet us. And that's just the condition many of them live under there. And since Brother Danny talked about Mozambique, I'll mention another situation too. He was not with me. This time we were in another place in Mozambique, and there was a boy there who was almost blind, very, very poor eyesight. He was not but about 12, 13 years old, very most. Going blind, didn't have much hope at all in living. It's a place in Africa where there is no hospital, there is no tent, there is no doctor, there's nothing of that kind, not even a store, not anything of that kind where we were, way out in the bush. We slept in a tent there too, a tried to one night. And while we were there, we took interest in this boy. Now with me that time was a brother from Colorado who was a paramedic, I had been. He knew quite a bit about medicine. And he really became concerned about this boy. So finally we made arrangement to take him, not this time but later on, across the border back into Malawi over to a Seventh-day Adventist hospital. And the boy was seeing good last time we knew about it. He'd gone blind if we had done that. It just takes a little bit of money, a little bit of time. You can really help those people out if you can do that. But there's so many you can't help. There's just so many that way. For example, this same place, the brother wanted some aspirin for some of the people there, and he didn't have any, and I didn't have some, so I brought my little bottle of aspirin out, and he started giving the aspirin out. Had a whole line of people, everybody on aspirin. They don't want aspirin, why? They can't afford aspirin. But the fact is, we're giving them out, they all wanted one. So you can imagine how scarce medicine is. We can tell you stories all day long about things like that. very poor people, but they're very nice people. And the thing about it is, even though they don't have very much, they don't have much food, they don't have good houses to live in, no restroom facilities, many of them have walked many a long, long way to get water. Those kind of people that you might think are destitute, and they are, you don't see them crying, you see them smiling. They come to the church and they'll sing and they'll sing and they'll sing and they're happy. You don't hear bad words. You don't hear discouragement. They're always happy people. You bring the gospel to them, and of course what they want is a Bible. It's just amazing how many thousands of Bibles we've given out over there in Africa and still doing the same thing. In fact, Danny didn't know this yet, but I have just three letters here that I just received. And the one I've had for just a little while, I've received it like about the 1st of June. And this man is asking for 120,000 kwacha to buy a lot. And you have to watch about these things too, because we just built a brand new building where he is about 4 or 5 years ago. Nice building, very nice building. We had to pay for it, had to put metal roof on it, very, very beautiful building. And that's asking for buy another lot. You have to watch carefully about that, because why is he wanting another lot? Why does he want to build another building there? Is there a division in the church? So these kind of letters you have to watch carefully, because you really don't know what's behind it. Of course, then Brother Ron will look into this as soon as he get over there. And then I have another letter here from my brother, and he's thanking us for it. 20 churches listed here for the money we sent over to pay for the famine that they had had and the drought they had, and express appreciation for that. This same brother also wants us to buy him a car, which is very rare to do over there, because first of all, he probably doesn't have a driver's license. He probably doesn't know how to drive a car. He sent a list some time ago of about 20, 25 churches supporting him and asking us to buy him a car. But of course, he couldn't afford a car. There's no way he could pay gas for it. No way he could have the repairs for it. So you have to be careful in those kind of things, because they don't really know what they're asking for. And we have those kind of requests all along. And of course, we have to do what we can to help them out as we have opportunity. Now, we have this drought situation that was there the early part of this year. And the total that I added up not long ago, and I sent several of you a copy of it, was $59,750. That's how much we paid to buy food. And it didn't cover everybody. You can imagine now, with thousands of members over there, how little each one of them would have gotten. I'm sure to get to all of them. And so every once in a while, they have a famine. They have a drought of some kind. They eat roots, they eat leaves, they eat whatever they can. Some of them eat grass, and some of them die too as a consequence of it. So it's a different world that they're living in than what we are acquainted with. But the work in Africa is going very, very well overall. They're in need, they're poor people, that's true, but they want the gospel. And we have some very strong, very dedicated men that we're working with. Last night, I knew I was coming here. My computer had gone down a number of hours before. Brother Brad helped me with it to get going. And I had to send money, which is the end of a quarter, beginning of another quarter, to support several brethren we are supporting over there. We're supporting about 30 brethren, 22 in Africa, and about 8 in the Philippines. So we had to send money last night for all those. It amounted to pretty close to $12,000. Some of them getting $25 a month, some of them are getting up as far as $300, according to where they are, who they are, what part of the country they live in. People in the Philippines require more money than they do in Africa, because the living conditions are different. We owned the Philippines as a nation for 50 years, and they're Americanized, and so they expect more than people in Africa do. But to be real blunt with you, I think those who've been can say they really enjoy Africa far better. People are humble, they're kind, they're polite, they love us to come, they're interested in the gospel. And when you, then they know that you're going to have a meeting, and word gets out, they're going to have a meeting. Unless you're careful to let them know that we need to have the people in this particular area. You can have as many, we've had as many as 1,500 people in one meeting. And they have to sit around in all the grounds, no place to get into the building. And sometimes it's very hot over there. We've seen the group get under this shade tree and under that shade tree and under this shade tree. So we'll be speaking to people all around on the hillsides. I remember this particular place I'm thinking about, we had 1,500 people. Services lasted 5 solid hours. And they didn't leave. They stayed, they wanted to hear. And quite often when you stop in your speech and you say, let's take a break because I know you're tired of sitting there, often they say, no, you keep going, we can't hear this. And you also be sitting on it. You know what a brick is? Sometimes I'll have 2 bricks, one on top of the other, that's what they're sitting on. No bite. And they sit there all that time to listen to you. It's a different world than what we know of. Here, if our air conditioner went out or something like that happened, we would think it's drastic and we'd have to go home. But not there. They expect those kind of things. Well, not only are we working in the Philippines, but we're also working in 5 of the major islands of Africa, working on 5 of the major islands in the Philippines. The Philippines has 7,700 islands in that whole archipelago, which is the largest in the world. But many of those islands have nobody living on them. There's only about 800 people live on them. We're working 5 of the major islands over there. We have about 40 churches in the Philippines, and they're growing and doing well, too. We just recently opened a new area up on Luzon, which is a major island, and we have probably in the neighborhood about 8 churches in that new area that we're just now working into. We're responding real well. I was supposed to be there in the month of June, but I had to go to the hospital, some of you know, so I didn't get to go, but we sent some other brethren instead, and they did a marvelous job, just returned just a few days ago from that trip. They have had recently typhoons, which are same things like hurricane, and they've had earthquakes. We've had to send money over to help them out because of those problems, and we've done so, and they responded very well. Now, what's interesting is this to me, we have some churches in England we're also working with, and one in Manchester heard about the earthquakes in the Philippines and wrote me and asked me if our brother needed some help over there. Of course, we did. So I told them who to contact, and the brethren in England sent money to the Philippines. So that just shows the cooperation we're having in a number of places of the world that we work. I mentioned Malta earlier in our studies this morning. Malta is an island, as you might know, which is just south of Sicily, just south of Italy. Now, this is an island where Paul was shipwrecked, if you remember back in the book of Acts. There's a church there, one church in Malta. It's about 25 or 30 members. Last time I was there, I've been there several times. And we own a building there on Malta. It's a 3-story building. We own just a corner of it on the ground floor. It's a very nice place to meet. It's brick, and it's a very, very desirable place to meet. It's right across the street from the university. And one day the bank came and wanted to know if we would let them rent from us the corner of our building. They wanted to put a teller machine there. And they were willing to pay $7,000 a year just for the use of that little few bricks they took out of the wall. And of course, the brethren did. So the brethren have an income of $7,000 a year now for really doing nothing. And it's a real blessing because the students are right across the street, and of course it's ideal for them. Now we have a brother there who's extremely capable, one of a very good student of the Bible. He speaks English very well. Well, we did not have a good translation of the New Testament in Maltese. And so he translated the New Testament into the Maltese language. We had a Catholic version, but not a version we'd be approved of. And so he translated that. And just recently, Brother Ron Slocum, who's going with these brethren the next few days, he had it printed in Texas. And so they're using that in America now. We also have some work in Belize. Belize is a country just south of Mexico on the Atlantic Ocean. there are two congregations there. They're very small. One speaks English, one speaks Spanish. And both of them are very poor people. But the two churches are there, presently there in Belize. Then in Mexico, we have some new work in a place that is 2 days' drive below the border. It's a very enjoyable little place to be. It's almost on the Pacific Ocean. We have a new building there that we built about 2 years ago. It has become so full, we just have to enlarge it. And so now it's a much bigger building, and they're growing. Doing a very, very good job down there. We have that we can put our finger on, and that are with us and working strongly with us, about 8 congregations in Mexico right now. We've had some that were working with us, we thought, but we found out we had a man who was not trustworthy, and he said the story was not true. There is about 8 churches now in Mexico that we can say are with us all the way. One of those is Nogales, which is just below Arizona. It's a growing congregation, new congregation, and has a new building. We just got the building here, cost about $5,000. And it's a very nice little building they have there. In the Philippines, the church is growing and doing well. We have a number of brethren there that are capable, very, very good speakers, very good workers. Some of them are young, in the 20s and 30s, and some of them are close to older, too. Now, one thing I want to tell you about them that I think might be interesting to you, they had a preacher's training school at a place called Lumpo. This is the first congregation we had in the Philippines. When I say we had it, let me mention it to you. The congregation, they've been there for a number of years, largest congregation in the Philippines. And it had Sunday school, had women teachers. They had a preacher's training school there. They were working hand-in-hand with the extremely liberal brethren out of Lubbock, Texas. And when they had a volcano explode, I really mean that, exploded, so there's no volcano at all there. I kept looking for it. And one of the brethren told me where the volcano was, Mount Pinatubo. And they said, well, it's over yonder. Well, where's over yonder? I kept looking. I couldn't find it. Well, I couldn't find out finally that it was several miles away. And one day I got a chance to go up there. There's no volcano there. It didn't erupt. It exploded. There's not a thing there now but water. And you can reach down. The water's still warm, still flowing out of that volcano. But anyway, when Mount Pinatubo exploded, it covered miles and miles and miles of territory down to where Longpo is. The place where I'm speaking it out used to be a naval base there for the United States Navy. Well, it covered a lot of damaged area there at Alamapo, including the church building. And when a brother in the Navy went over and was stationed there, he's trying to find a Church of Christ. And eventually they pointed out to him where the Church of Christ was, and he found it. And the building had been damaged. He didn't notice the Sunday school, didn't realize they were having Sunday school at all. And so he sent a message back to us that I found a church just like us over here. You need to come over. And so first thing I did was jump on a plane, went over when I heard about it. And of course it didn't take but about 15 minutes to find out what they were, because talking to some of the brethren, I quickly picked up what they were. They're very, very liberal. Had several things that we disagreed with. But anyway, we began to work with them for several days. And then near the end of the week, we got two of the leading brethren together and explained to them that we observed they were having some things that we did not feel like were scriptural. So we turned to 1 Corinthians 14, 34 and 35, 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 11 and 12, about classes and women teachers. And the brethren sit there and listen. They didn't say a thing. Just sit there and listen to us and speak to them about that. And finally, after we explained our views on it, what we thought the Bible taught, why we don't have women preachers and women teachers, why we don't divide the classes and things of that kind, one of the brethren spoke up and said, Harry, he said, we know those verses are there. And we've gone all the time they were there. He said, you're the first person to ever come over here and tells us that it means what it says. The people from Texas who are sponsoring us and have been supporting us to come up and tell us it doesn't mean what it says. He said, you're the first person ever told us it doesn't mean what it says. And so they gave up the classes and the teachers and straightened themselves out. Didn't work for them ever since. Eventually got rid of the preacher training school, which what they were doing was turning out pastors to go and find a job somewhere so they could get paid for the preaching. And that's precisely what they were doing. Well, we disapproved of it, of course. In effect, is how we described it. You have a machine, you put a young preacher in here, turn a crank, he comes out with a stamp on it. And that's about what happens. He comes out with the idea of looking for a job to be a professional preacher, and that's, of course, not the way we function at all. So they eventually got rid of that, began to be very faithful. We're working with a number of churches in that area that are faithful as well. Now recently, since that preacher school is gone, since they changed their way of life, and since the Lubbock now has lost their influence, a group in Alaska, who are very, very liberal, they wanted to restart the preacher's training school, so they offered them the opportunity to let them have their money and their services to start the preacher's school again. Our brethren there said, nothing to do, we don't want to have anything to do with it. So they went somewhere else and left along the coal. So my point is this, those brethren are honest enough to understand that when they found the truth, they're going to stick with it. So we have in Africa and the Philippines and other places, we have a number of brethren that are very, very firm. You can depend on them, put your finger on them, and we're so thankful for that. I told someone the other day, and I think Brother Danny and Brother Ron agree with me on this, we have some brethren in various places that if we never had the opportunity to go back again from America, they'd carry on that work. We know that some of them wouldn't. We have a number of brethren, such as Bryce Tambi, such as some of the Mahangos in Africa, that would carry their work on if they never saw us again. And that's what we've been looking for. Something to be firm and solid. Occasionally, we hear something from Africa like this, that the way America is going, someday we may have to send missionaries over to you. And that's the way it seems like it is going out there. We have so much liberalism, so much things have to do with the worldly trends and immorality over here. Contrast that, if you would, with what happened a few years ago in Malawi. A few years ago in Malawi, I'm talking about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, if an American woman had flown into the airport over there and gotten out of the airplane in her shorts and halter, they'd have put her back on the airplane. They would not let her set foot in Malawi. It's changed now. They will. And that's sad. But most of the native women there now, in fact, I don't think I've ever seen one otherwise. They're modest. They're clothed well. And the men are the same way, too. They don't have the indecent dress that our people over here do. And also, it's another interesting thing. How am I supposed to talk? There's another interesting thing, too, that we notice over there. They don't have ball fields like we do, with big stadiums and all. Most of what they have out of the bush where most of the time we work is a field they have cleaned off. Don't have a ball, so they take rags and make a ball. And they have their ball games. They kick the ball around, throw the ball around. They don't know what a football is. Oh, their football's round, like a soccer ball. Our football, they don't know how in the world to handle those. Because it's not pointed the right way. It's not round, it's pointed. They don't know how to handle that. And not long ago, we took some baseball bats and baseballs over there. They'd never heard of baseball. And when we taught them how to play, and they did, they enjoyed it real well. So that's the kind of situation that we find in various parts of the world. We are an exception here. We are blessed beyond any nation of the world, with finances, with all kind of machinery and things of that kind to make our life easy and comfortable. But those of us who appreciate going to these foreign countries and the brethren are kind to support us in doing so, when we leave our brethren that we worked with for years over there and come home, we leave part of our heart there. You can't help it. They're not black anymore. The color's black, but they're individuals. you see faces on them that you don't see here, because here we see a black man. Over there we see individuals. They lose their blackness. I mean, they're still black, but as far as we're concerned, they're our friends, they're our brothers. Oh, let me tell you another story. One day we had a brother who had tried 12 times to get a passport from the Malawi government to go from a few miles north of the border across the border to work in Mozambique. He worked over there. And they would give him his passport. Of course, they take your money or they do what they can and keep it stringing along, but they wouldn't give him his passport. So one day he asked me if I would go with him, being a white man and being American, and try to encourage them to give him his passport. And I told him I would. So we went to the passport office, just a huge crowd there trying to get passports. And I went to the window with him, and I'd written a letter, and I gave the man the letter explaining that we needed this man to have a passport to continue our work in Mozambique. And he said, well, you come back this afternoon after lunch. Well, we stepped away from the window. The lunch was there. They closed the office. In the afternoon, we went back. And this time I didn't go to the window because the man had my letter. He knew what it was all about. So I stood in the background, and our brother went by himself up to the window. And when he did, the official behind the window said, what'd you bring your boss for? As criticizing him. And it just tickled me. Our brother said, he's not my boss, he's my brother. And that just tickled me to recognize the fact that he recognized us, not as his boss, but a brother in the Lord. We could go on and on. And I suppose that's enough. And is there some questions you want to ask? If there is,
Well, y'all said Kate Bible's up there. Are they printed in the language, African languages, or are they
translated,
or are we picking more English, or
are
they no English?
The Bibles over there are Tetewa, which is a language that the people in the southern part of Malawi speak. Now, way up in the north, they have another language called the Buka. And we have some few Buka Bibles that we buy, but almost all of them are. Brother Ron Sogum recently gathered pretty close to $7,000 to buy Bibles, and we did. I don't know how many are left. You'll find out when you get there. Probably quite a few of them are already used. But over and over and over again.
I think we got a little
over 5,000
this time to put on Bibles
too. Oh, good. Well, Bibles, by the way, used to cost us about $3 a piece, and now they cost pretty close to $8. So they've really gone up. But the Bibles are printed, the last ones are printed in China. But they are printed in their language. They are Bibles that can look pretty close to this. It may be a flexible cover, which they like, or maybe a hardback. And some of the brethren like to have English Bibles because they can speak English too. In fact, it's a little interesting. Brother Bright Shatambi is one of our primary brethren over there who can speak English and travels quite a bit different places. And he spent so much time with us from Georgia and Alabama. Now, he speaks with our brogue. He doesn't speak like an Englishman. English people come down there, they don't understand him like they do themselves because they speak Southern American English. me. I remember that one day, in order to try to clear my mind as to why some of our black people in America speak as they do, I said, Brian, I want you to count for me. I start with one and count. He said, 1, 2, 3, 4. He didn't say four. He said four. Now you see where it came from. It's not American black language. It's from Africa. He's never been here. He didn't know to say four like they do. He said four because it's the Africans. I said, okay, this thing you walk on here, what is that? He said, that's the floor. Not the floor, it's the floor. So I learned very quickly that some of the speech of our black people in America is not because they can't. It's because they brought it over with them from Africa. Now, most of you are too young for this. Just a couple of you know this, but quite a few years ago, when I was a boy, I would go out to the farm in northern Alabama, and there would be black women almost all of them had a basket on top of their head walking down the side of the road. Because they wave at you as you go. You don't ever see it anymore. In our field, you always see that. And sure enough, back in our country, as far as the early 1900s, the black women here always had a basket of something on top of their heads and have excellent poise. They don't lose those baskets. They are very good. I wouldn't take a step without dropping it, but they know how to do it. They're raised from a young girl to learn how to carry things on top of their head. Now, one more thing. I'm not saying this in a derogatory way at all, but right when they was talking to me about the Negroes, you don't use that word over here. But he didn't know better. So he used that word over there several times talking to us. Meaning, well, the black man. Of course, we don't like to use that word anymore. I'll say that. Thanks a lot for listening. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Brother Harry.